Portland.
Hey, KBOO supporters, it's Giving Tuesday, so it's the perfect time to show your financial support for your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland. KBOO is part of this year's Give Guide, which means that when you give today, you'll be eligible to win Give Guide's nonprofit PDX Gives Back package, which includes a $100 gift card to New Seasons Market and a bundle of goodies from participating nonprofits. And if you're 35 or under, you get an extra chance of winning. One extra nonprofit PDX Gives Back package is reserved for winning donors under the age of 36. So support KBOO on Give Guide this year's Giving Tuesday by donating today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks.
Good morning. You're tuned in to KBOO Community Radio. Coming up over the next hour, more Talk Radio's Celeste Carey talks to three different nonprofits that are participating in this year's Give Guide: Albina Vision Trust, Project Pooch, and Hacienda CDC. Each of these organizations is just like KBOO and is participating in this year's Give Guide by Willamette Week. Give Guide is in its 14th year and is a list featuring Portland-based nonprofits and organizations and gives people a streamlined way to do end-of-the-year giving and to learn more about the plethora of nonprofits in our city that provide services to local communities. A full list of all the participating organizations can be found at giveguide.org and at kboo.fm/give. First, we have an interview with Portland-based artist Kyene Talton Davis from Albina Vision Trust. Albina Vision Trust is stewarding the thoughtful reinvention of Lower Albina, the cultural heart of Portland and the once thriving center of Portland's Black community, from which thousands of residents were forcibly displaced. Albina Vision Trust seeks to honor the neighborhood's history by restoring its identity and transforming what exists today into a vibrant, socially and economically inclusive neighborhood.
I'm bringing today to your ears and imagination creator and innovator Kyene Talton Davis, who is working with the Albina Vision. This is an organization that seeks to bring creative, eye-catching, imagination-stirring documentation of the Black community's history and future here in Portland, and especially in the Williams Avenue corridor and Alberta Street corridor. And so as a co-participant in the Willamette Week winter campaign, KBOO is supporting our colleagues in community change by just exploring and exposing and mutually exposing you and the Albina Vision Trust to each other so we can strengthen those community bonds. Good morning. How are you doing today, Kyene?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. The sun is out, and for the Pacific Northwest, instead of the pearly gray, we got a little bit of streaks of blue and what else shall I call it? Auspicious vision? Would that work?
Yes.
You know, sometimes in the Pacific Northwest, when the sun comes out, we're not sure whether we've done something wrong or to celebrate on a cosmic level, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So first and foremost, I mentioned the Albina, let me get my mouth right here, the Albina Vision Trust. Not only is that a proverbial mouthful, but it speaks to both something in the past and in the future. Tell me a little bit about the Albina Vision Trust and your relationship with it.
So I am working with Albina Vision Trust as an artist, looking at the history, creating ways to tell the story of Albina, especially Lower Albina, and also creating opportunities for community connections and facilitating community input as part of the community investment plan design team.
Well, that sounds rather intense. So if we were to unpack that so people could say, how can I access this? You know, how can I be a part of this? What would you call it in just, you know, maybe five words less layman speak?
I guess I would say that I am an artist working to build community connections for a better Albina.
And it's through pictures, word, permanent markers, and installations in here in the Portland community, correct?
Yes, all of the above.
Oh, great. So what are the impacts that you hope to make or problems that you're looking to solve with the Albina vision?
Yes. So looking at decades of urban renewal, racist public policies, displacement, and divestment having destroyed the once thriving Albina community, we are looking to honor the neighborhood's history by reimagining its future. And the majority of the work that I'm doing in that is the bridging that community effort in making sure that this work is community led and as also community driven when we're looking at the various agendas and the design and things that are going to come out of this project. The community investment plan, which is where we are right now, is working to move the vision to action through you know, again, community engagement, because that's one of our most important things. Urban design, looking at the economics, different ways that this can be funded, different ways that it can move forward in the future. How do we build wealth for the community, generational wealth? And then also, again, back to that history, art, and storytelling, because so much of what we seek to do in the future can be found by looking at what's been done in the past, how it worked, how it didn't work. And what are some ideas that can be gathered looking towards the future?
Looking toward the future, especially with us being in the pandemic, I can imagine that vision may stay the same, but there's been some changes. What are the challenges of either staying true to the vision or modifying it to kind of flow with these pandemic considerations? What are the challenges and changes you're dealing with?
I think, much like many other organizations, one of the biggest things has been not being able to meet in person and make those connections that way, especially with our community engagement portion. But then as well, just being able to meet with colleagues and have those conversations that happen as you're waiting for a meeting or hanging out after a meeting. I think everybody can kind of understand that lack of person-to-person communication and engagement that's happening now with COVID and the restrictions in place for that. But then also, that aside, it's also a challenge when setting new precedents for a different kind of work, for a different kind of vision and idea that people are interested in but unfamiliar with. And I think with moving in that direction and helping people to envision a future, it takes a very special type of imagination and innovation.
So if you're looking to both modify your approach for community building, which a lot of times really means meeting in person, like you said, and keeping that vision true to what the community wants, how do you measure the impact of your efforts? What are some of the successes that you've had over the past year?
So we've had, one of the ways that we've been engaging with people has been through what we're calling our Joy Initiative, which are a series of events that are really just there to celebrate the community and tell the, you know, remind the community, hey, we are here, we are listening. We want to make sure that you understand you're part of this process. And so our first one was a video where we interviewed several community members and had some music act perform. We were working with Friends of Noise to do that. And so that was we streamed that on Facebook Live. And so what might have been too large of an event to hold in person during these times, we ended up with quite a few viewings of that. And that's one of the beautiful things of doing things online and so on, is that people can access them later if they've enjoyed something and they're able to share it in a different way. We're also creating surveys to really kind of get down to the point of what people are interested in seeing. Some of those questions revolve around, what is your vision for the future for Albina? What does community mean to you? What is home? Kind of unpacking a lot of different things.
One of the things that fascinates me is some of the subtle changes that we've seen in, for example, just how people view home and view community with the gentrification that's really scattered the Black community. So now we're kind of a community without walls or without a geographical fixed place. Do you find that even, you know, despite the pandemic, that there is still a strong sense of place for the Portland Black community in North and Northeast Portland geographical area? Or do you think we have adapted and adopted more of Portland is ours, all of Portland is ours attitude, since we've been so scattered from the hood to the numbers, so to speak?
That's a question that we've definitely worked on. Part of our directives is to remember to all team members that, the Portland Black community is not monolithic, but then also that it exists. So many times we hear that either there are no Black people in Portland or there is no Black community. And, you know, we're here. We've been here. We're still here. We will be here. And I think that's really kind of our operating theme.
Yes.
And even in our connections with reaching out to the community, we're seeing that even though people may not still be living in inner northeast Portland, there is a connection. For instance, when we do our surveys online or we ask for our feedback from the workshop, we've held a couple workshops, the vast majority of the Black and African-American participants have indicated that they are, if not currently tied to the historic Albina area through living there or working or attending a church or some other function within the community, then they're perhaps only one generation away. Maybe they grew up there. Maybe there are still family members that are living there. But there is still very much so a physical connection.
I like that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want to continue to evolve that and remind people that this is, you know, this is still something that's here for you.
So not just metaphorical roots, but actual roots to the historic community. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That gives people a strong sense. I like the fact that that gives us a strong sense of ownership of the whole metropolitan area, you know, so we feel that it, you know, regardless of some of the cultural clashes that have occurred and still occur, there's a sense that now more of Portland belongs to the Black community.
Yes.
Great. So how do people get connected, stay in touch, and support the Albina vision, especially through the Give Guide?
Yes. So we have a website contact form, and then also we're on all major social media platforms. So we're definitely active on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And then, as you mentioned, through the Give Guide, which is great. All the business sponsors are Black-owned businesses. And then also Nike is offering a dollar-for-dollar match for the first $25,000 through the Give Guide donation.
That's great. And is this match tied to new or increased donations, or is just plain no conditions, dollar-for-dollar?
Just the first $25,000. So dollar-for-dollar, first $25,000.
Well, in that case, then what I would say, listeners, is why don't you be one of the first? Because then you can feel like you are a foundational supporter of the Albina Vision Trust. Finally, as we're part of the Give Guide as well, and one of roughly 174 nonprofits to come together and be highlighted through the graciousness of the Give Guide, I want to ask first, which category are you in? Are you in the nonprofit or in the creative category?
Albina Vision Trust is in the nonprofit category.
Okay. And with you being part of the whole Give Guide cohort, I want to ask a question both as someone who knits together community, but as part of the Give Guide cohort, how do you see KBOO community radio as important to our community?
You know, KBOO has been around as long as I remember. And I always remember as a native of Portland getting news and music on KBOO that didn't really hear anywhere else. And I think that continues to this day. Being a radio station that is getting out, you know, definitely some different information, exposing people to some new things, which is always, you know, for me as an artist, a great thing to see. And I think it's just a very, very valuable resource for the community at large.
Well, thank you. You know, that makes us feel like we're doing something right, especially considering the fact that we're looking at ways that we give back to Portland. And if you are looking to participate in building more community strength, your dollar cannot be better served or matched even than it can be if you participate by giving through the Willamette Week's Give Guide effort. And so you get the support, like I said, over 174 nonprofit visionary community work and organizations. So take a moment, go visit Give Guide. Take a look at the Albina Vision Trust and leave a hello on one of the many web pages or platforms for Kayeen and all of the other people who are taking place in the We've Been Here remembrance and future vision of the Albina Vision.
That was KBOO Celeste Carey talking to Portland-based artist Kayeen Tolton Davis with the Albina Vision Trust. You can find more information about Albina Vision Trust at albinavisioninc.com and on their Give Guide page at giveguide.org/#AlbinaVisionTrust. Next in our interviews of Give Guide participants, Celeste talks to Reina Mahajan from Project Pooch, an organization that teaches responsibility, patience, and compassion for all life by preparing homeless shelter dogs with youth incarcerated at McLaren Youth Correctional Facility in Woodburn, Oregon.
Good morning, everyone. This is Celeste Carey for Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. And as part of the Willamette Week Give Guide campaign, we at KBOO, one of the fortunate participants, are trying to get the word out about other participants here in the city of Portland as Portland gives back. And I have on the phone with me right now, Reina from Project Pooch. And Project Pooch, if you don't know anything about it, is a nonprofit dog, and it's at the McLaren Youth Correctional Facility in Woodburn. Tell us a little bit about Project Pooch, please, Raina.
Yeah, so Project Pooch is a nonprofit dog rescue, as you said, and we are located at McLaren Youth Correctional Facility. And so we pair shelter dogs with youth who are incarcerated over there, and the youth learn to train them, groom them, care for them, and help them get adopted. And so while the dogs leave the program with a new forever home, the youth often leave the program with valuable vocational skills and responsibility, patience, and compassion for all life. So it's really a win-win.
So that's a fascinating project, because most of us know that in terms of community assets and family challenges, not having an opportunity to express or receive love is one of the things that causes a lot of problems for young people. So you kind of nailed it all in one. Dogs who don't have love get love. Youth who need some love get a chance to not only love but be loved. So it sounds like the perfect program.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, a lot of times these dogs and these youth come from very similar backgrounds of strife or neglect, and so it's really easy for them to bond and, you know, really connect and get to know each other. And then when they experience that unconditional love that they may have never, ever experienced before, they're able to really modify their behaviors as a result.
Hearing that this is kind of a program based on love, what are some of the challenges you have with both connecting with the youth, connecting with the dogs, and maybe what happens when the youth leave McLaren? Do they get to take their friend with them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I'd say that one of our biggest challenges at Project Pooch is just that we take in dogs that might be a little harder to adopt. So we take the ones that have severe behavioral issues. They might be a little older or experiencing some medical issues. Often they're actually at risk for euthanasia at the county shelter. And so we take them in and give them a second chance. So I'd say a huge challenge is just teaching these dogs how to love again. Often, you know, when we first get them, they are really closed off, don't want to look at anyone, don't want to eat. And so, you know, just teaching them to build up that trust again, and similarly teaching the youth trust again, can be a challenge. And when it comes to the youth leaving the program, what's really a wonderful thing is that a lot of them go on to become either vet techs or groomers or trainers. So they really develop the skills to succeed in the future. And although we've never had a youth go on to adopt their dog, one of our former youth, his parents actually adopted the dog that he trained.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, so he's able to see the dog and, you know, really see how the dog's, you know, progressed and developed since being at McLaren. So it's pretty awesome.
So it sounds like not only do you solve a problem of giving youth a chance to grow and develop and learn empathy and love, show love, but the animals themselves get the same opportunity in life. What are some of the challenges that you've encountered with the pandemic? Has that affected your ability to get suitable pets? Has it affected your opportunities to have the young people work with the pets?
Yeah, so it's definitely affected our program in a lot of ways. I'd say that one of the biggest ways is just that since we're at a correctional facility, COVID can really spread like wildfire. And so we've banned visitors and volunteers from entering the facility. And so we've had a lot of long-term volunteers really come and serve as mentors or role models to the youth over the years. And now they are not able to come into the facility and work with the youth, which has been really hard. We are still getting dogs, though, and the youth are still working with them. And so we're really trying to, you know, lead by example, teach them to stay positive, keep doing what you're doing. People are still wanting to adopt dogs, you know. Yeah, the need for unconditional love doesn't stop even in a pandemic. So we're really trying to keep going despite the challenges that have come our way.
Given the fact that you have had a really successful model both before the pandemic and during the pandemic, how do you measure your impact? And you did mention one of your successes is having a young person become a vet tech. But what are some of your other successes that you've had this past year?
Yeah, so we've had dogs that, you know, have come into our program really just shut off from the world, and then they've gone on to become emotional support dogs or agility champions even. Also just, you know, seeing the way that the youth interact with the dogs at the beginning of their time at Pooch, and then just seeing the way they've progressed as they've worked at Pooch for longer, and just seeing, you know, the change in attitude, you know, their passion for wanting to work with dogs, maybe wanting to go and pursue a college degree. That's really the gist of it, how we measure it.
Oh, that's great. So how do folks get connected? How can people get in touch and give to you?
Yeah, so I would recommend taking a look at our website. It's pooch.org, and there's a give button on the website. Of course, we are very happy to be featured in Give Guide, and so we're in the animals section of Give Guide. And additionally, we are on social media, so Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and we'd love to, you know, keep you updated through social media.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much for this, Raina. One more question. Might sound just a little self-serving, but the whole point is to knit community together. How do you see KBOO Community Radio as an important role and participant in our community?
Yeah, I mean, you are spreading the word about so many amazing nonprofits, and that is just something that is invaluable, especially during a global pandemic when, you know, a lot of nonprofits are having a hard time or struggling to get the word out and just changing the way they operate. So the fact that you are interviewing folks like myself and just spreading the word about these amazing projects that are going on in the community is incredible. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the wonderful work that Project Pooch does, not only in McLaren Youth Correctional Facility in Woodburn, Oregon, but the work that you do in giving back to Portland. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Raina Mahajan, Executive Director of Project Pooch. More information about the work Project Pooch does can be found at pooch.org and on their Give Guide page at giveguide.org/#ProjectPooch. And before we move on to our next Give Guide interview, I just want to remind everyone that today is Giving Tuesday, the largest day of philanthropical giving of the year. And if you've never heard of Giving Tuesday, it's a neat day to add to your calendar if you're a financial supporter of local nonprofits. Because Giving Tuesday is thought of as like the opposite of Black Friday, where instead of giving to retailers, people give to organizations and nonprofits that support communities. So this year for Giving Tuesday, KBOO is happy to be part of Give Guide, because if you donate $10 or more to KBOO on Give Guide today, Not only will you be supporting your favorite community radio station, but you'll also have a chance to win a Giving Tuesday prize, possibly from GiveGuide, which includes a $100 gift card to New Seasons Market and a $100 gift card to Paloma Clothing. And anyone who gives at least $10 through GiveGuide will get free access to the Chinook Book mobile app coupons and discounts, as well as some other freebies from local businesses. So for more information about all incentives available from GiveGuide for Giving Tuesday and beyond, and to support KBOO on GiveGuide, go to kboo.fm/give. Now for our final interview this morning, Celeste Carey interviews Hacienda CDC Executive Director Ernesto Fonesca. Hacienda CDC provides safe, affordable housing for over 1,500 people in the Portland metro region and are on track to double the number of affordable homes they offer in the next 3 years. They run the Portland Mercado at Southeast 72nd Avenue and Foster, a hub for Latino culture, food, and entrepreneurship. Hacienda CDC served over 3,200 people in 2019 and are working tirelessly to support low-income families, business owners, and community members through the pandemic.
Good morning and hello, everyone that is listening to your Community Connection, KBOO. This is another community partner interview that's part of the wonderful Willamette Week Give Guide giving campaign for 2020. And here in 2020, we're looking at giving back to Portland. And that might sound a little strange, but it literally means as a nonprofit community based organizations, we're looking at strengthening Portland by strengthening people, strengthening neighborhoods, strengthening communities. And so it's with joy that as a mutual participant in the Willamette Week Gift Guide, KBOO is reaching out to some of our participating partners and highlighting them here on the air. I have with me today Ernesto Fonseca, make sure I get it right here, with Hacienda Community Development Corporation. And as I understand it, Ernesto, you are the CEO and you've been in effect since April 2017, and you're bringing your fresh passion to Portland for community development and helping people and families strengthen and put down strong and thriving roots. So tell me a little bit about you and Hacienda and how you two met.
Well, it's a short, long story, however you want to hear it. But I've been working on community development and housing issues, social justice issues, as well as environmental issues for decades now. But when I moved from Wisconsin to Arizona, I think that was a turning point for me, because Arizona, I say, you know, even though it's a beautiful and amazing state in so many ways with so many wonderful people, it's got some serious issues around, especially immigration, the way people tend to see the Latino culture as well as the Latino community in their state. That is to say, you know, with that comes a lot of controversies in the state. You know, one of them is that we account for almost half of the entire population in Arizona. And with that, you know, the Latino community in Arizona has gained a lot of power over the years, and that power is not necessarily welcomed by many. So I got involved even more so in Arizona with many different initiatives around immigration, social justice, and of course, you know, one of the things that I do best, and I've been getting better at it, is affordable housing. I do see affordable housing as a human right. I see affordable housing as well as the services surrounding, you know, the affordable housing projects as well as any kind of housing as paramount for us to advance the progress of our community. So when I was in Arizona, one of my dreams was really to have the opportunity to lead a Latino organization. I didn't have a lot of chances to do this in Arizona because the Latino organizations there are very, very old and they are very well established and their leadership is very well established as well. So even though I know them well, they are friends, we work together, we collaborate, I did work for them and so on and so forth. My opportunities for me to undertake any of those initiatives, whether it was Chicanos por la Causa or Phoenix Revitalization, you name it, they were really slim. So one day, out of the blue, one of my friends that actually he was my boss in Arizona had been named the executive director of the Portland Housing Bureau. He called me and he said, you know, there's a position open in Hacienda CDC for the executive director. I think you will make a great director there. I was very flattered to hear that. You know, by then I had already done a lot of work in Arizona around affordable housing, developed, you know, hundreds and hundreds of housing units, and I was involved in policy development for multiple cities through my urban planning firm. And I had also run for office a couple of times, and I was part of the leadership of the State Democratic Party. So all of those things came together in that they were a good stomping ground for me to gain a lot of experience,
understand
a little bit more of what needed to happen on whatever I, you know, whatever I decided to go or whatever an opportunity would arrive. And this time, you know, arrived here in Portland. So I didn't think about it twice. I applied, and then, you know, be careful what you ask for because you may get it. So I got it. And since April 2017, I've been here in Portland. I was commuting for a few months, and then I moved here. So with my family, my two kids, Emiliano, 12, Emma, 14 now, and my wife, Susan. And it's been really a wonderful experience to be living in the Portland community. It took me a little while to understand the community. I'm not claiming I do now, but I do understand a little bit of how things work in Oregon, how things work specifically in Portland, and that has enabled me to bring some progress to the organization. Of course, this progress has been very well supported by many people that work with me here in the organization. And I have an amazing team that it took us a little while to put together. You know, when with new leadership come new challenges. And some people decided to move on, some other people decided to stay, and some other people were new arrivals. And these new arrivals have helped me, including the ones that decided to stay, to move the needle to do better, really. You know, it's Hacienda right now is doing quite good.
That's wonderful. Hacienda last year served over 3,200 people in Portland and the Portland metro region. Since the primary aim is to serve the Latinx community and serve by providing low-income housing for families, affordable housing for families, after-school and early childhood programs, and financial education / ownership classes. What you're doing is providing a really important anchor to the community so that they can thrive and go off to other higher achievements. So what kind of challenges have you faced this past year in solving some of these housing and immigration and home ownership issues? What are the problems that you've faced and overcome?
Well, one program that you didn't mention is the small business development program that we have through the Portland Mercado. So, you know, the way I see Hacienda, just to elaborate a little more on what we do, Hacienda, you know, was founded about 30 years ago here in Northeast Portland, in Cali. And it was founded with the idea of providing high quality housing, but more than that, to really start revitalizing this community in ways that, you know, really hasn't happened, you know, for decades and decades. At some point, you know, our founders, as well as myself, you know, understood that housing by itself was not enough, and we had to provide some more supporting services to really enable our families to keep moving forward. With that said, we do housing, youth and family services, economic opportunity, or financial services, however you want to brand them, and small business development. Not school is not for everyone. Not everybody has the opportunity to really get a mortgage in an easy way. So some of the things that we've been focusing very seriously is into expanding our ability to do more and more housing. For a few years before my arrival, we didn't do a lot of housing developments. Actually, we didn't do any of them for about 3-5 years. So that was one of the things that we needed to press and started getting involved right away as soon as I arrived. One of those issues, one of those projects that is the most significant for me, it's the former Sugar Shack redevelopment. It was the biggest strip club, and now it's going to be a beautiful 142-unit apartment community.
Yes, I remember that. People were very proud of their accomplishments of actually buying that property. I remember that.
Yes, and you know, we had a lot of problems financing that property in the past, and buying it to begin with, then financing it, and the ideas that people were coming up with and some of the community leaders were all over the place, you know, from a McDonald's to a Dollar Tree to a gigantic car wash to a warehouse, production, whatever. Well, I don't know how to do any of those things, so my focus was really, you know, let's just do some housing, we find a way. So we made it happen. You know, the city of Portland has been extremely supportive, the state has been extremely supportive, and the community, needless to say, you know, they've been on this side forever. So that happened, but that's only 142 units. Before that, you know, we're doing another 242-unit apartment complex in the city of Gresham, in this county, in the Rockwood area. And then we were awarded a few more projects, one in Oregon City, one in Beaverton, and one in Aloha. So all projects, you know, are going to more than double our housing stock in the next 2 years.
Well, that's wonderful.
It is amazing. You know, we're doing 582 new housing units as we speak. 224 of them are already on the dirt floor, you know, that we're framing as we speak in Gresham. So all of those things are really making our organization not only stronger, but also expanding the impact that we can bring to the city of Portland and beyond. See, here's the key word of my comment, and beyond, because, you know, we adopted under my leadership a concept that is really, you know, directing a lot of what we do and where we go. And that is, you know, we, a city should not be known for what it is located, but instead for how far it goes to where communities are. The Latino community is no longer, you know, a predominant community in the city of Portland boundaries.
Yes.
Or you are moving to Hillsborough, Gresham, Oregon City, Woodburn, you name it.
Yes.
We're going to go as far as we need to go to fill that gap. So that was one of the biggest challenges, I must say, you know, to find the financing and the structure and the team to do affordable housing. It's a challenge. It wasn't, continues to be a challenge, but we are well in our way to really solidify that department as never before. And that is very important, but because that brings a lot of resources, not only in terms of housing, but also on restricted dollars that we can use for other programs. So here is where the other programs come in. Once and as soon as we have more and more resources that we have been able to do over the past 3 years and a half that I've been here, we are expanding those programs. You know, we have more ability to support and to provide more and more programming, and to also, you know, better the benefits, salaries, and everything that is given to our employees for the work that they do.
That's wonderful. So not only building up the community, but as an employer, being able to give your employees a living wage and make sure that they thrive too. Now, how has the pandemic changed how you serve the community? And how do you measure your impact and effectiveness in the community?
Yeah, the pandemic has been a real trip. I can tell you that at the beginning of the pandemic, I was really focused on many of the wrong priorities. You know, I was trying to get people back into the office because I didn't understand the pandemic. I didn't understand the timeline or how long this thing was going to last. So that slowed down our process, and that for me to be blamed because of my structure mindset that, you know, we need to do this and we can do whatever we need to do, you know, to make things happen. It is true, you know, we have been able to do all of those things. As things keep progressing with the pandemic, we have and readapt quickly, you know, to get hundreds of computers, to get, you know, webcams, to get, you know, chairs and everything that they work from home. I had to really understand that my own priorities, my own feelings around the pandemic were not rooted in understanding my team. So that was a really humbling time for me to understand that we are grieving the losses of our social life. We're grieving the losses of our safety feelings when we are not afraid of each other, that we're going to, you know, infect each other for whatever reason. So that was a big challenge, and that changed everything, literally everything.
I can imagine, yes.
I mean, yes. You know, now we're providing programming remotely, consistently. We were scheduled to open this year 4 innovation labs with the support and partnership with the Verizon Foundation. We are not able to do that at the moment. We are providing and delivering those services online. We actually are just giving away about 200 computers to some of our students. They will receive college credit through PCC as well as to Oregon State University. And they will also receive a small scholarship once they graduate through our programs to go to OSU.
Oh, that's wonderful. So it sounds like even though the pandemic and you know, you working through how you can look at it and make have been a challenge, you've overcome them in a meaningful way. To support that work, I know takes money, and we're blessed to be co-partners in the Willamette Week's Give Guide campaign for 2020. How can folks get connected with you and Hacienda, stay in touch and support to give, either through the Give Guide or your direct efforts? How can people get connected?
Excellent question, Celeste. I really appreciate it. So one of the major things that you mentioned is that all of this work requires money. Obviously, you know, we need to continue funding our staff, we need to continue funding our operations, and we need to continue investing in the community. And I say investing because I don't really like the word of just donating. You know, we're not donating. We're investing in communities that can be stronger, and therefore all of us, you know, can be stronger at the same time. Right now, our budget seems to be stable, but we are consistently, you know, trying to find more resources to precisely strengthen those services and that housing that we're trying to deliver to the community, not just once or twice, but all the time. So one of the ways that people can do is to go to the Give Guide and find Hacienda Community Development and select right there and then. Just donate directly to us is going to our website, either through the Portland Mercado website or to the Hacienda CDC website, and also make a donation right in that spot. You know, they can donate via credit card, via debit card, or they can also send us a check to Hacienda CDC 6700 Northeast Killingsworth in Portland, Oregon, 97218. And the other things that they can do really is go to the Portland Mercado, support those small food entrepreneurs. take out from the Portland Mercado. It's a great opportunity for them to get to know one of our initiatives and to understand, you know, what kind of work and to see it really right there on the ground. If you need a loan, you know, a mortgage loan, come, give us a call. You know, we can give you a loan. We're very competitive with the rates. If your credit is not so good, we can help you fix that. If you don't understand how to buy a house, we can help you achieve all of those goals in no time. And also, if you need, you know, services for your kid or things like that, for school primarily, please give us a call and we will find out, you know, how we can help you, if we can help you. But I, you know, chances of us being able to help you are really, really strong. We're a really big organization, and we are always, you know, looking for chances to support the community in every way possible.
Thank you so much for that. And my very last question here is kind of as we weave community together through efforts like Hacienda and the Willamette Week and their Give Guide campaign, how do you see KBOO Radio as important to all of us and our large community?
Oh, gosh. You know, KBOO has been playing a significant role into really focusing on the things that the community care about. The focus, the philosophy of KBOO since I've been listening to, it's rooted in the community, and some of those needs that the community have sometimes are not expanded. They are not magnified in a way that makes sense for the community. And the work that you do really is expanding our voices and expand the voices of those communities so we can come together. Organizations like ours and the community that needs our services, and those that don't need our services, we can all collaborate. Some of us by donating, some of us by investing, some of us by receiving the services, and you by expanding our voice.
That was Ernest Fonesca, Executive Director from Hacienda CDC. More information about the work Hacienda CDC is doing can be found at their website, haciendacdc.org, and at their Give Guide page at giveguide.org/#Hacienda-CDC. There are over 170 different organizations participating in this year's Give Guide, so if you're looking for a way to support your favorite nonprofit, including KBOO, just go to giveguide.org. There you'll find KBOO's Give Guide page along with all the details about all the incentives Give Guide is offering today for Giving Tuesday, as well as other incentives available throughout the end of the year. And most importantly, you'll find information about how to further support local organizations along with discovering some new ones you might not have heard of before. Again, that's at giveguide.org. And before I go, I just wanted to give a big thank you to everyone who has donated to KBOO on Give Guide already. Individual donations is how KBOO keeps these airwaves going. So thank you to everyone who gave. We know times are tough right now, so your financial support means so much to us. Thank you again, and thank you to everyone who believes in volunteer-powered, community-focused radio. And thanks for tuning in. Thank you.
was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness.